Serving veterans from sea to shining sea. You're listening to Hometown Heroes with Paul Leffler. Brought to you by this local station and its sponsors. And presented everywhere on the air and online by Paul Everett's RV Country. With 8 locations in 5 western states.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes and the incredible journey of Dr. Oscar Rice. He fled Germany as a teenager, became a decorated infantryman for America in World War II, receiving the Silver Star and the Purple Heart, among others. He would learn that his brother, his parents, and his grandparents were among the more than 6 million Jews killed by the Nazi regime. And this young man who was spared that fate, a young man who came to America not speaking a word of English, who had been a dairyman before the war, he would take advantage of the GI Bill to go on and earn a PhD in biochemistry at the University of Chicago. And he has been producing scientific and medical breakthroughs ever since. In fact, I think when you hear about some of these, you're going to realize he's likely had an impact on your life. I know we don't have time to go through all of them, but Dr. Rice, what are some of the innovations or discoveries that you're most proud of?
It's got to be my publications in environmental medicine. But really, if you want to come down to facts, yeah, it's the development of the PSA.
All right, so let's touch on some of these. So first of all, in the 1960s, when radio ads and television ads and newspaper ads and every billboard still says, smoke a Camel or a Marlboro.
Yeah.
Or
oh, yeah.
Virginia Slims, you wrote the first paper?
We were 3 people.
And what was the conclusion of that research project?
That in homozygous emphysema, you shorten your lifetime 50% if you smoke.
And that was the first scientific paper that suggested smoking reduces your lifespan.
Yeah.
And now that's a given. Kids today, they don't know that we ever didn't know that.
Yeah.
And maybe people didn't listen early enough. Was it hard for you to see that continue over time?
Oh, yeah, of course it's hard. I went to a conference at the University of Chicago on the future of democracy. One of the senators from Illinois. Now I won't talk about the gender because it would give it away. What took you 30-some years to pass a law against smoking? And the answer was, why do you think it took so long?
The industry.
Yeah.
So you were certainly ahead of the game there. You even helped solve a problem that NASA was having.
Yeah, by accident.
Well, don't the best things happen by accident?
Serendipity is called.
So you're here in Colorado, and there's a chemist who's working with you who's trying to figure out what's wrong with the hydraulic fluid they're using on NASA rockets.
Yeah.
So you put it in your centrifuge, and what do you discover?
That there was mercury in it.
Because he had noticed it's cloudy.
Yeah.
If he didn't notice that, you're not going to put it in there. So you notice there's mercury, and why was that a problem?
Because mercury amalgamates brass and doesn't permit the valves to open.
So the valves were not opening because there was mercury in the fluid.
Yeah.
So you get mercury out of the fluid, and now their rockets work fine. All right. So there's another one. You're still working in environmental medicine. You had some breakthroughs identifying the factors in infantile distress syndrome. And then in 1970, there's something that now everybody knows about that back then nobody knew about. The very first Earth Day address?
Yeah, at the New Jersey College of Medicine.
What'd you say?
I warned everybody about lead poisoning because in the ghettos there, the kids were, of course, starving. They were eating the paint that had lead in it. Of course, nowadays, all the paint companies use titanium for lead.
Yeah.
So already in 70, it was clear how dangerous lead was.
And you mentioned something when I asked you about your achievements in this field, the PSA test. Now, every man knows what a PSA test is, and anybody in the right age group has had one. And without it, they wouldn't know whether or not they have indicators of prostate cancer.
That's right. And this is a good indicator of prostate cancer.
How did you develop that?
A student of mine went out to California, and he got very interested in immunology. And he is now, by the way, with Eli Lilly as a co-director of one of their labs. We were kicking it around, so to speak. What if we could develop a blood test to detect prostate cancer? It was well known that prostate contains a lot of the enzyme called phosphatase. He did the early development on that. But then when it came to putting the final touches on, namely getting permission from the FDA to market it, I did all the work. Well, and Bell Bonfils helped me because I had to get 180 blood samples of people that weren't on aspirin because aspirin interferes with the process. So we need to call it a joint project.
Sure. Most major achievements take a team of people, not just one. But without you, we might not have a PSA test.
Well, somebody else would have probably developed on that, but it took a lot of concentration to do it. I had the luck that one of the premier pathologists that was working with prostate was still alive at the University of Colorado Medical Center. Gary Miller was his name.
And I'm struck by this. I'm not trying to be melodramatic.
I know.
But you did some things in the Army in World War II that saved fellow soldiers' lives. The lives you most desperately wanted to save, your family, you couldn't. Because of Hitler. And now, all these years later, you develop a test that, I mean, I have to imagine, has helped save thousands of lives, if not millions.
Well, that's why I went to science, helped do some social work.
What was your motivation all this time?
Well, it developed, really. Chemistry professor at the Ag School, my experience with the cattle they feed at Ellicott City, and then, of course, with the chemistry department. There was a chemist, a very famous chemist, who was Ike's special scientific advisor, Westheimer. You make all these contacts of people that are scientists, so they stimulate you to try to find out what's going on in your body and what we can do to improve diseases.
Have you ever thought about that? Have you ever tried to quantify how many people have survived or been able to treat prostate cancer because they got warning?
No, I don't know.
Do you think I'm off in my estimate?
I don't think so. It makes me feel proud that I was able to contribute something.
And ultimately, on that end, I guess we have your parents to thank for their foresight in sending you to this country.
Especially my mother, who constantly said to me, get educated. That's something they never can take away from you. That's who gets credit for it, who deserves the credit.
I guess I have to ask, in light of all these breakthroughs that you've been a part of, whether you set out to do that or not, is there a question, a dilemma, a puzzle, or enigma that faces humanity that you think about and you'd like to try to solve?
Yes. I have two ways to answer that. I have some evidence that pesticides are more toxic than we currently think from preliminary experiments with medical students in the 1970s, okay? I tried it three or four times. I tried to get money for it to follow up on it.
To really bear out that research.
Yeah. And then it was turned down every time. And the reason it was turned down, and I'm fairly sure, I'm not 100% sure, is that the chairman of the committee that works on the grants, I was violating his dogma. He set the dogma for the levels of pesticides with basically poor experiments. I did it by inhalation, which is the way it has to be done, and he did it by just injecting the pesticides in the perineum of animals and seeing when he could find symptoms.
Were those specific pesticides? I mean, this isn't a blanket statement about all pesticides.
No. I can make the statement for this sulfur-containing pesticides, parathione, malathione. When a THI have in it, then the sulfur pesticides. The other one, I can't talk for the other ones.
So it's your conviction that if someone were to do a scientific study along your parameters, that they would find that there's a greater toxicity than we currently understand.
And there are multiple possible implications. And I don't want to talk about the implications, but there are tremendous implications. And I'll give you one example. A bunch of women epidemiologists at Berkeley, Princeton, and I think it's Harvard or Yale, I don't know, published articles that pregnant mothers that are exposed to pesticides have a much higher incidence to give birth to ADH children. And I think there's a chemical connection between the two, and that needs to be established to be sure that this is so.
Well, and if you never investigate, you never know.
Yeah.
And you said you had two answers. What was the other one?
It's very hard because I have to go into science to explain to you. And I don't know if you want to get involved in that. There is an enzyme, and it's only in the lung, that is called an alkyl hydrolase, which, in my opinion, controls a substance in the blood which is present in very small quantities. And this enzyme hydrolyzes it and makes it inactive. And this substance acts on the cannabinoid receptors in the brain, which controls, and that has not been finite established, controls the calcium metabolism of the nervous system. And calcium is an essential component for nerve conduction. So
what you're saying is that this area of research would have a great impact on one of the things that's really happening right now, which is the greater use of marijuana and cannabis products.
I don't know if the cannabis, if they're involved. I'm very hesitant to say that. I'm only saying that it's the receptor in the brain, like the morphine receptors, there is a cannabinoid receptor. If it's disturbed, causes trouble in the nervous system.
So the implication is, if you fully understood this, you would greater understand the effects of marijuana on the nervous system.
Right, right.
Which would be a good thing to know when states are legalizing it.
Right.
Including yours.
Yeah. But this is a long projection. It would take at least 3 to 4 years to definitely establish. And the collaboration, I'd need the radiologists to locate the cannabinoid receptors, which has not been done to my knowledge.
Uh-huh. It would be an important thing to do.
Yeah.
Well, you said it'll take 3 or 4 years. You're only 95. What are you waiting for?
Money to do it.
And serious question. I mean, everybody hears how sharp you are, how vibrant you are. If somebody said, we're giving you a grant right now, put together your team to study this, would you do it?
Sure.
I believe you.
Yeah, but I must tell you that a student of mine that I'm very close to, because he became the chief pulmonary pathologist at Mount Sinai Hospital in New York, and he understood all the I could explain to him all the chemistry behind it.
Yeah.
And he says, forget about doing experiments. Just write it up as a hypothesis and let other people do the experiments. And I'm maybe tempted to do that.
I think you should. I think future generations might appreciate that. I know there's plenty that they already appreciate that you've done in your career. And I'm sure we could sit here for hours and hours talking about it, but I don't want to forget to say thank you.
Oh, yeah, you're welcome.
Thank you for serving our country. Thank you for coming up with a test I'm going to have to take someday to make sure I don't have prostate cancer. I do want to ask you, what would you say you're most thankful for?
That I made it through World War II.
Yeah, the story ends there if you don't.
Yeah.
There's three daughters that never would have been born.
Yeah, right.
And what are you most proud of?
What my daughters are doing, molecular genetics. And she's working hard on that. And she's consultant to Los Alamos, some of the work they do and genetics they're doing. And she's also volunteered to teach young Latino students about science.
Very cool.
The other daughter, which is now doing some real good dietitian work in Houston.
I do want to ask you, because you have probably as powerful a perspective as anyone could on the Holocaust. People today, most of us didn't live through it. What do people today need to understand, need to remember, and need to watch out for?
What I worry about is still the amount of anti-Semitism that is present. This is undeniable.
What's the answer? What's the remedy?
Keeping an eye on it and publishing it. And make people feel bad about it. And that the Jewish race has committed not only to certain sins, but they have also had a lot to do with social advances.
Well, and if you don't like this question, you don't have to answer it. But the one question I didn't ask you, if I think about the history of the Jewish people, I mean, it all comes back to a relationship with the Almighty.
Right.
And a plan that he had for you. When you look at your story and where you were and what you went through and what you've been able to do in your life, do you feel like he had a plan for your life? Do you see divine intervention in your story?
To a certain extent, yes. I wouldn't say total extent, but to a certain extent, yes. I still go to Jewish services at the high holidays and things like this.
Well, here's hoping there are many more holidays and, who knows, more scientific breakthroughs for Oscar Rice, 95 years old, soon to be 96, of Denver, Colorado. There's so much we didn't have time to touch on, like the trees he had planted in the Martyrs Forest outside Jerusalem, a memorial to the family members he lost in the Holocaust. If you visit Jerusalem and you go to Yad Vashem, the Holocaust Museum there, you'll even find items donated by Dr. Rice on display. I can't send you to Jerusalem, but I can point you toward the Hometown Heroes Facebook page or to hometownheroesradio.com for photos connected to this really remarkable story that I trust has amazed you the way it has me. We're out of time today, but thanks so much for listening. I'm Paul Leffler, reminding you again that freedom is not free.